folks. Welcome to another edition of East Texas Out Loud, the double disaster edition with Polk County Judge Sydney Murphy.
Good morning.
Happy multitasking.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
We have been COVIDing for how many weeks now? Several weeks.
Wow.
And then we had an extra bonus surprise for the west and northeast end of Polk County.
Yes, ma'am. We've been in COVID-19 quarantine issues up to this point, the stay-at-home order, which today the Polk County stay-at-home order got lifted because now we are fully under the governor's, whatever his plan. We no longer have independent, I guess I should say, input in terms of how to proceed from this point forward. So we're now fully under the governor's plan in terms of phasing in the economy. So today the stay-at-home order for Polk County was lifted. And I think he's lifting his Friday, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. But then we got hit on Wednesday by an EF3 tornado that pretty much ripped across the shorelines of Lake Livingston, mm-hmm. impacted the city of Onalaska and the Onalaska surrounding areas on down to Seven Oaks. Mm-hmm. And, of course, down all those roadways, down 350, 3152, all of those areas were severely impacted.
Yeah, that community that we hear locally usually refer to as Bold Springs, they had several houses with serious damage.
Yes, ma'am.
We've both just come out of a meeting where you talked about we had three people lose their lives.
Yes, ma'am.
And have 57 injuries?
Yes, ma'am. Yes,
and three ma'am. Of those are critical.
Yes, ma'am. And those are three out of the four that were life-flighted that had to be taken in and have been critical. And so at least one of them has been downgraded to, mm-hmm. to where they're not critical anymore. So we've been kind of paying attention to what's going on with those individuals. One of the things that we discussed was the fact that had it not been for local volunteers, you know, for responders,
right.
especially the volunteer community. I do have to just say that the volunteer community just stepped in immediately, you know, with county employees and just, mm-hmm. it was all hands on deck on Wednesday. And had we not responded that quickly, had we not been in there, then 30, 45 minutes, people were already responding to the cries for help and getting trees literally off of people, off of individuals, mm-hmm. and literally pulling people out.
Yeah, there were some phenomenal rescues that
Absolutely.
Happened in that golden hour that
yeah.
I always teach with trauma, and that's just entirely due to the fantastic extended fire rescue that we have with Onalaska, Livingston, and many, many more
yes,
communities.
I think we had,
I know San Jacinto County groups came over. And
everybody. Tyler County was there, Trinity County. Everybody that could respond did. I think we had 29 different fire departments mm-hmm. that were represented at one point in time in terms of the rescue efforts. And, you know, even the next day, I was fully expecting us, or braced myself, I guess I should say, mm-hmm. for having at least double digits
yeah.
in the fatality range. And I don't think I was alone on that. Mm-hmm. I know that a lot of the firemen felt the same way, that we mm-hmm. didn't know what was going to happen.
Well, we just had still a lot of people who we had not checked on or had any contact
yeah,
with.
Yeah, and they were stuck in areas that nobody could get to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody could get to their homes. And so a lot of those teams of volunteers and of local contractors that just pitched in along with the county and especially the precinct barns, they literally worked till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, went home, took a shower, got something to eat, mm-hmm. and were back. And so a lot of those people worked 20, 30 hours mm-hmm. just trying to make sure that we did get in there and that emergency vehicles could go in there and respond, or at least that some of our EMTs could go in, you know, on four-wheelers or golf carts or whatever it took mm-hmm. to get into the very back of some of those neighborhoods, because those trees, they just got laid down.
Right, you know? And we're talking 100-year-old trees,
you know, absolutely.
Not saplings or something.
No,
like that.
We're not talking about little saplings that bent over and ornamental pears,
yeah.
you know, that break if you breathe on them too hard. You know, we're talking about, like you said, huge, huge oak trees that you could not wrap your arms around, and big pine trees too. You know, mm-hmm. it just literally laid the pine trees down in some cases. And so there you were with an obstruction mm-hmm. of a pine tree that had a 3-foot diameter on it.
Yeah.
no way to get over that.
Some Civil War dropped a pine cone. And
exactly. Way back when.
And utility services. I know Chico is part of a larger partnership that has just doing a phenomenal job of getting the power grid back in shape over there, because we started out with more than 1,700 people without power. And as I heard one first responder put it, we've got more live wires on the ground than we have.
Yes, up in the air. At one point in time, we did. And so part of Chico's response immediately, in conjunction with emergency management and the fire chief out in Alaska, was literally to shut off.
Yeah, they had to shut off everything.
They had to shut it off because there were so many live wires. There was so much destruction. Mm-hmm. And when we say destruction, we're not talking about just a line down here or there.
Right.
We're talking about poles that were broken or poles that were laying down completely, you know, not just a couple of limbs that need to be sawed off and gotten out of the way. The destruction was so widespread that the only way to make sure that we did not mm-hmm. create more injuries was to completely shut down the power grid.
And we had all sorts of layers of debris from many frame houses that you could see.
Absolutely.
You know, someone's car with their neighbor's roof from three houses down on top of the car.
Or wrapped around trees. The debris right now is incredible. And so we have moved into the debris management. And that's part of this tornado that makes it different from other weather events, I guess I should say. You know, with a hurricane, you can see it coming, you're mm-hmm. tracking it, they're telling you it's now a category this, it's now a category that, the winds are at this speed. You see, I'm saying gusting, not gusting, steady. So you can almost watch it and anticipate it. Mm-hmm. The problem with a tornado is that you can't track it, watch it, or anticipate it unless there's already been several of them on the ground.
And for the folks out there, they did not get a lot of warning. We went from kind of vague awareness that, hey, we're going to have some rough weather tonight, to, hey, the tornado's a block away from you.
Exactly. And one of the things that we implemented, you know, within the last 4 years or so, one of the things I wanted originally was a reverse 911, mm-hmm. which is what we have now. So we have this Alert Me Polk County. So mm-hmm. anybody that has not signed up for Alert Me Polk County, mm-hmm. if nothing else convinces you to, it should be the fact that we are currently under two disaster declarations for completely different reasons. You know,
right. And these have both been incredibly rapid situations.
Absolutely.
Like they change. But I know Brian and I have been talking about, by the time you get the story written, the situation's different.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so the thing is that with that Alert Me Polk County, it comes through the National Weather Service. And so what they do is they send our computer an alert, and then the computer generates it out via mm-hmm. text message or phone call or whatever you have signed up for personally. And so it goes out. So we were in the EOC, COVIDing. We were doing COVID-19 things, and we were supposed to have a conference call meeting with all the volunteer fire chiefs. And so while we were getting ready for that was when it rolled in and rolled out to notify, and then it all went haywire. Mm-hmm. You know, then we started getting phone calls and requests, and people were panicking because, I mean, just as soon as we heard it, it evidently just jumped over the lake.
Justifiably panicking. If you've never experienced a tornado or a waterspout moving across the Lake Livingston, it is...
It's a sight to behold.
It'll be on your scariest moments in life list.
Yes, absolutely.
So now have made tremendous progress on all the utilities. Water, is Unalaska still under a boil water notice?
To the best of my knowledge, they are, and they probably will remain for a little while, because right now we're trying to get everything up. And since we still do not have electricity in some areas,
right.
It's hard to process the water. I think that Chico is just working as quickly as they possibly can. They've been on multi-hour shifts as well, mm-hmm. as well as everybody else, just trying to get everybody back on board going, right. Just basic utilities right now.
And for all the folks in that area, there are groups out there that are helping them keep their cell phones charged so that they have access to things like, I know emergency management has a list of, this is where you can get meals and this is where we're dropping off water and all of those services. we get a lot of questions here about people who would like to help.
Absolutely. What we did was, as those requests for assistance came in, as people requested to volunteer in areas, then we connected them with who they wanted to volunteer with, or who, if they wanted to make a donation or contribution. Mm-hmm. So right now we have multiple groups on the ground. If they're interested in volunteering, they can call Center of Hope, because Center of Hope also has been helping set up volunteers, as well as emergency management. We have multiple phone lines set up now for requests for assistance as well as volunteer requests.
So if someone will just call either emergency management or Center for Hope, and we're going to have both those phone lines on our website, they can match you and your particular set of skills with the person
Absolutely.
That needs it.
Absolutely. Because what's been happening recently is that the groups are gathering. If you're going to help in the Onalaska area, then those groups are getting together at Garland Park and mm-hmm. then disseminating from there and going and doing cleanup. The one thing that we do need to make sure, because we have gotten multiple calls about, well, what about FEMA? What about FEMA? Are we going to get FEMA mm-hmm. assistance? Well, part of what happens with FEMA is that you have to reach a certain threshold of damage before mm-hmm. they will provide any assistance to anyone. So it's not like, you know, your house got swept away completely and I'm missing two sheets of tin, that they're going to help you but not me kind of thing. It's an all or nothing. And so we absolutely need for people to document the damage so that we can compile as much information as we can so that FEMA will evaluate it and assess it. But if we don't have it and we can't prove it,
right,
then it didn't happen. And we all know that it did happen. So we do need for everybody to document everything. If you paid someone to come help you clean up debris, you need to keep that receipt and you need to be able to present it.
Mm-hmm. And all of that stuff. I've seen a lot of social media posts saying that we have been declined for FEMA, and that is not true.
That is inaccurate. And the problem with those social media posts of people saying that we have been declined is that then people don't keep their records. Mm-hmm. And so they are actually hurting the homeowners mm-hmm. that we might be able to get assistance for, you know, because then the homeowners say, well, why bother with all this if I'm not going to get any
right.
help?
We're approaching what we believe is the threshold.
Absolutely.
And we just need everyone to get with emergency management
and provide all the information and documentation that you can, because that's the only way that we're going to be able to reach those thresholds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after looking at it from the air, mm-hmm. it was just incredible to me, the amount of destruction. And I think you and I talked about this, that it just looked like a giant hay cutter came through there. You know, it's like a giant lawnmower that just came through and just mowed everything down and just literally laid the timber down mm-hmm. as if a hay baler was going to come along behind it and,
right.
you know, bale it up. It's an incredible, incredible circumstance.
And there's certainly a good part of this population who has no insurance. They've been off work for a month or so because of COVID. So they are very, very vulnerable and need the help. But you can supercharge the health you provide if you will coordinate
with emergency management.
With emergency management or Center for Hope. Because one of the problems we had initially after the storm is DPS troopers couldn't reach people that were calling 911 because there were so many tourists out there gawking at the damage. So
yeah, and you know, that's just human nature.
It very much is, but
it makes things difficult for DPS, for law enforcement, for your volunteers that are out there trying to provide assistance. I myself got caught in that. Mm-hmm. We had set up incident command mm-hmm. in Onalaska because that was the largest impact. Mm-hmm. And I was at the emergency management. I was at the EOC. And so just trying to get to Onalaska.
Yeah, it was becoming nearly an hour drive.
Yes, it was a real challenge. And we needed to be there. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I needed to be there to sign the declaration, mm-hmm. to make it an emergency declaration. And a lot of people don't understand what the importance of that. If we do not do an emergency declaration, if we don't say to the state and to mm-hmm. the federal government, we need help, well, then they won't send help.
Right.
And so a lot of your naysayers, yeah. you know, that say, well, we don't want the state's money. Yes, we do.
You pay tax on everything you buy. And it was wonderful to hear. I mean, I know for my own peace mm-hmm. of mind, listening to the police radio, here in Texas, Task 4-1, key up in Sevenoaks. And
absolutely.
I thought at least that gave me a better picture of, well, if they will take that portion of the impacted area, our local guys can get their arms around Onalaska.
Well, and Task Force 1 was everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, they were in Onalaska, they were in Sevenoaks. You see what I'm saying? They were everywhere. And so that's the whole purpose of those teams. Those teams are highly, highly specialized. Mm-hmm. They're highly specialized in terms of providing public information. They're specialized in search and rescue. There's, you see what I'm saying? There are multiple teams, and every one of those teams descended on us
right.
as quickly as they possibly could. Some of those people were here within 2 hours.
Right.
And so they literally duffel bag in their car.
They literally do.
Yeah, no, I'm not exaggerating. They literally do. And they, whatever they're doing, wherever they are, they just turn around and head your direction. And so it was satisfying, I guess I should say, and helpful that they were able to descend on us so quickly with that level of expertise that they bring, mm-hmm. you know, that they bring with them.
Between Task Force 1 and SETRAC, the Southeast Texas Regional Advisory Committee, which if you've ever had any, they're like a MASH unit for civilians.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the Texas Department of Emergency Management immediately deployed every asset that, mm-hmm. that we could potentially need. So the state response was fabulous. But now we have to do our homework.
Yes.
You know, we have to do our homework. We have to do our due diligence. And we need to make sure that we absolutely document everything so that we can try to provide assistance to these people that have lost their homes. You know, they've lost everything.
Yes. So I know that I've seen some documents about a phased-in kind of recovery process because Courtney just announced in Commissioner's Court a few minutes ago that a lot of these folks are being sheltered in hotels because
yes,
of COVID, that we can't put them in a group shelter like we mentally picture after a hurricane, and that we're talking about some nonprofits are stepping forward that have camp and conference facilities that they may be moving to.
We currently have several of those individuals at Camp Choye. Mm-hmm. And then Camp Cullen has also agreed to open its doors in Trinity County. Mm-hmm. And so those will be some of the safest places for especially some of those families.
Right.
You know, I cannot imagine being in the middle of this COVID business, mm-hmm. losing my home, and then having a six-year-old.
Right.
I mean, I just...
Or even the smaller children, there have been just
anything.
Horrifying stories about the moments of the storm and holding on, trying to hang on to an infant.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
so I just can't imagine, you know, how horrifying it would be and how nerve-wracking. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, your nerves are already frayed, and now you've got three kids hanging off your pants leg, you know, while you make some really difficult decisions for your family.
Right.
So those individuals are under a tremendous amount of stress, and so we need to do everything that we can to make sure that this is, you know, it's already a difficult situation, but let's try to do everything we can to keep it from becoming more difficult.
And so these folks are not really ready for... I know I've seen a lot of posts about people that have household items that they want to donate or clothing. They don't have any place to put it. Is that accurate?
The people that are currently in the hotels mm-hmm. Obviously don't have anywhere to put it. But there are some people who had serious damage to their homes, but...
They're going to stay there.
And they're going to stay there, and they're going to try to do everything they can to fix those homes, right, to get that as fixed up as they possibly can. And that's where a lot of our volunteers will come in, and mm-hmm. that's where during Harvey is when we kind of forged our partnership
right.
with Center of Hope, because we were receiving donations, but we didn't want to accept them into the county, you see what mm-hmm. I'm saying, as a county line item.
Right.
So we wanted to have a nonprofit that mm-hmm. would accept those donations and contributions, but provide the services to
right.
county residents. And so what they did during Harvey was they would go in, help people, you know, build ramps, handicapped ramps, rebuild the front porch, mm-hmm. go in and do some pairs. And the same thing with all those other organizations, Samaritan's Purse, the Baptist Men, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All those groups, they all come in and help with that kind of activity. So that was basically the premise behind it. It's just we have something that we know it works. Mm-hmm. And so if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Right.
Right. And so we just get out of their way. And basically what we help them with is telling them who has reached out, who needs assistance. And then they coordinate it from there. Then they say, okay, this person needs more of a nail and hammer kind of person, but this guy needs a sheetrock helper, or this person needs help with plumbing, or, whatever the issues might be. Then they go in and help them do some of those minor repairs. Obviously, they can't do anything extensive. Mm-hmm. But then we also have local contractors and local people that are out there helping clean up debris and move it to where the county contract will take over.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's move on to coronavirus. We talked briefly about the governor's reopening the state.
Yes, ma'am.
Are we ready? I mean, I've read, and it doesn't seem like it's been as obvious as I would like it to be as somebody who has a compromised immune system. You still have to be very, very careful. It's not, Monday is not going to be like November the 12th, that we can just run and
I think
kiss our friends on the lips.
Yes, no, let's not. Let's pass on that completely. For a while. I think part of it is a balancing act. So here's what I would present to you. So at which point in time does the immunocompromised person become responsible for their own health? Mm-hmm. If I'm immunocompromised, can I walk into a room and demand everybody else put on a mask?
No.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there's a balance there.
And we want certainly the other anybody who's compromised wants the rest of their family to get back to work and leave them alone.
Well, then there is that as well. Okay. But there's a balance somewhere between starting to reopen the economy. We can't just sit in our houses from now on until there's not a single person.
I wanted to.
You haven't been in your house yet, so why start now? Okay, so there has to be a balance somewhere. Mm-hmm. And the truth of the matter is, and I'm only speaking for my little corner of the world, mm-hmm. right? I'm only speaking for Polk County. Mm-hmm. But the truth of the matter is that if the big box stores mm-hmm. can stay open and the big box stores, can operate, and we are asking the big box stores to follow CDC standards, mm-hmm. then why can't Small Business America
right.
do the same thing? Okay, why close our small businesses that don't have the profit margin that your large box stores have, mm-hmm. that have more of a root in the community, mm-hmm. right? That some of our businesses around here have been in operations for 60, 80, 100 years.
Right. Because we've talked particularly about our two larger furniture stores.
Yeah, exactly. They're family owned and operated. Mm-hmm. And, we have small jewelry stores and we have small clothing stores that are, mm-hmm. they've been here forever, mm-hmm. right? So there are certain things that, yes, but I guess my argument would be that everybody should be on a level playing field. Mm-hmm. And that when you're going to advocate for the larger stores to remain open with considerations, well, then what makes the small store less capable of following right. those considerations? And so, I guess that's one of the areas that the governor and I will just agree to disagree, because he's the governor and I'm not.
Yet.
Right?
But
no. No, that's pretty safe.
It is. I think we're all looking forward to sitting down and a margarita and a Mexican dinner. But you do still need to have that very, your personal
responsibility. Very conscious, yes. And that's a personal responsibility. The government should not have to tell you that.
Because I know I never washed my hands until they started telling
me. Oh, Lord, don't tell me that.
No, but it is, keep on with that heavy-duty hand washing.
Absolutely.
If you are going to walk into an area that tends to have a lot of folks inside, like Walmart, wear a mask
or
something.
Yeah, pay attention. Do what you need to do for you to remain safe. That means telling the person that's breathing down your back in the checkout counter, hey, can you back up to those little feet that are right there on the floor or the X or whatever?
Yeah.
Then that's fine. Stop and look at it this way. If the original governor's order said that only certain things could be bought at the big box stores, mm-hmm. right? And right. other things were off limits.
Right.
Could not be sold, period. Then I guess I would feel differently about it. But if I can go purchase clothing and purchase shoes and purchase whatever I want at a big box store. Well, then why would we not open clothing stores and shoe stores and give them the same consideration?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Right.
And just tell them, tell those small store owners, you need to follow CDC guidelines. You know, in the second order, I think, that we did, that Polk County did, I put in there a capacity on purpose.
Right.
I said, you know, if 20% capacity, because to me, some of those numbers were so random.
Right.
You know, 10 people, but at a gathering, well, what does that mean? 10 people in a janitor's closet, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
But 10 people at a gathering at the Commerce Center.
You were talking about a whole, you know.
A whole different perspective.
A lot more social distancing.
Absolutely. And so my logic was, okay, let's take furniture stores. So if I have just a small furniture store, well, then my capacity is going to be smaller than some of these larger furniture stores, right?
Right.
And the fire marshal has formulas for what the capacity is. And so wouldn't it make more sense, which is what the governor now has done.
Yeah.
Okay. But we did that way back when. So, so what we said was, okay, if we do it at 20% capacity, well, then putting this random number on it, I'm not saying 10 or 5 or 12 or whatever. I'm saying based on the size of the building and the size of the load of people that can be in that building, it'll be 20% because we know that that will allow for social distancing, right? So I agree with that portion of the governor's order, saying 25%.
Right.
Okay.
Because 10 people in, just to use places that everybody's familiar with, 10 people in across the tracks listening to music is a lot different from 10 people in the Commerce Center listening
exactly.
to music.
So some of those numbers to me were extremely random, whereas a capacity for that building, and then the owner is responsible for that. Again, the government shouldn't have to come in and say, hey, you.
Right.
No more than 10 people.
Nobody wants to be the person that sparked the outbreak, which, speaking of sparking case numbers, right today as we're recording this, we know of 18. And after the response to the tornado, we are expecting that to spike a little bit because of that emergency situation. The Cleveland Hospital is coming forward and helping test our first responders and
county
employees.
Absolutely. Our regional health department, which we're under the Angelina, they are going to also move forward with some testing. Our local hospital obviously has been testing. And then the Cleveland Hospital has donated 500 COVID-19 tests. And the wonderful thing about the Cleveland Hospital is it's not like they're saying, here, knock yourself out.
They're going to run those tests.
They're going to run the tests. They're going to staff it to make sure that we are not overwhelmed with that. And we prioritized it because we had to. So basically, first responders and people that were directly involved, county employees that were directly involved with providing assistance, we will test those first because those are large organizations where it could get spread really quickly and take out.
And they had a lot of, you can't remove somebody from a fallen house and not have some personal contact.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And on that, on Wednesday night, there was no way to dodge it.
Right.
What do you do when people come running up to you? At incident command, you see what I'm saying? And they're frazzled and they're distraught and they come straight up to you and hug your neck. Well, you just hug them back and tell them you're glad they're safe because you're not going to then say, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah, don't
stand back, don't touch me, and where's your mask? You know,
yes.
Obviously, if they were eating dinner, they were not wearing their masks in their house. So we know that, and that's okay. You know, that's okay. It's just one of those things, and we'll deal with it.
It could have just as easily have been Indian Springs as been on Alaska.
It could have been anybody. It could have been anybody.
Yeah,
and we would have responded. You know, no matter what. And at moments like that, you're more focused on saving people's lives than you might infect me with a pandemic. At that point in time, every thought of a pandemic just went completely out of anybody's brain. At that point in time, communication is absolutely crucial. I mean, you have to respond and respond fast. You don't have time to mumble around. We'll deal with whatever happens.
So what is the forecast for antibody testing here in Polk County? It looks like when you compare our estimated population of 50,000 folks and you look at how many the health district says have been tested from public or private sources, not very many folks have been tested. Are we going to have a way? I know several people who kind of felt like maybe they did have a minor case of it. And so they're kind of wondering if they do have some antibodies floating around.
And the health, since we fall under the regional mm-hmm. health district, then they will make those decisions. That's up to medical personnel and how the state decides to respond to mm-hmm. some of that. I'm sure that to a large degree, since we are a rural area, right, then obviously
we're going to be far down the list.
Yeah, we're a little far down the list compared to some of your larger, more metropolitan urban areas, because those people are living in each other's hip pocket, you
right.
know.
And but it's even been pretty surprising when you compare to Polk County to other similar counties. Our case count seems very low.
Our case count
thankfully.
Has been low. Okay, our case count has been low, and I think that's due to how we responded to some degree, which mm-hmm. now got completely blown out of the water, right? Because, you know, if you read the stream of criticisms,
yes,
right,
read those close to bedtime.
No, because they just crank you up if you do. But the original stream of criticisms was from the very beginning, we're like, oh my God, you overreacted, this is ridiculous, this is mm-hmm. stupid. Because all we asked the community to do was to sit still for 5 business days, a total of 9 days. Mm-hmm. You know, 2 weekends, 5 business days is what we were asking the community to do. And there was a reason for that. First of all, and I laugh and say, since I have a Bachelor of Science, I laugh and say that, you know, I know just enough science to either stay out of trouble or really get into trouble.
Yes.
One of the two.
Well, you know? And I was a biology major too, and it's been very disturbing to me to how some people abandon science for other reasons. And it's like, you know, the virus doesn't care how you voted.
No, they could not care less. Nobody cares how you voted or
how much money you make.
Nothing. And so, okay, so as a biology person, then you know that if a virus has mutated twice, mm-hmm. you know,
there's more coming.
In less than a year, well, then it's mutating quickly, mm-hmm. right? So if it's gone from animal to human and then from human to human, and there's multiple strains now, then obviously it's a potential issue. So now the other thing that in my head is a no-brainer is that there are certain jobs where you generate more exposure for people, mm-hmm. right? Regardless of whether or not you've got it or not. So school teachers, mm-hmm. Postal workers, mm-hmm. any kind of health professional, they are in a come in contact with a lot of people that then come in contact with a lot of people.
Right.
So there's no way to avoid that. So closing down the schools mm-hmm. was very decisive, I think. So I do applaud our local school districts because that was originally their decision, you know, their school boards mm-hmm. To close it down. Of course, since then, Governor Abbott has said every school will remain closed. But nevertheless, I think our school boards, our local school boards and our local school districts were very, very decisive and, mm-hmm. and that it was a good decision. Were they originally criticized? Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, this is ridiculous, you know, blah, blah, blah. I can tell you this, I'll bet you every school teacher that is interested in a raise, I bet every parent now
right.
appreciates exactly what right. they do every day. But nevertheless, so I think that was very decisive. The other thing was, is that our first COVID case fell in one of those categories where the potential, right, for spread mm-hmm. was huge. And so that's why we mm-hmm. jumped on it right away. That's why we immediately responded and said, just tamp it down. You
right.
see what I'm saying? Just tamp it down right now. Because if we could all just hunker down mm-hmm. for that 7 to 9 days, mm-hmm. then we would be able to assess
right.
where we were or if there had been a major spread from that.
Because it would have been really easy for Southeast Texas to be exactly like New York City, where you're having the doctors are having to decide, you know, we've got 25 ventilators, who gets to be on one?
And that is what we
so
were
that's
trying
what
to
we
avoid.
Wanted, and we successfully avoided so far.
Yes,
so,
we successfully avoided it. We have, you know, the number of hospitalizations has been minimal. We have not had anyone that had to be on a ventilator. We have plenty of resources. Our hospital has not been in any kind of jam or bind
I stopped by there the other day, and I was very pleased.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, so we were successful, I guess. And of course, the naysayers will say, well, you know, this got blown out of proportion because look at our numbers. And the ones that think we were successful are going to say, we've been very successful. Just look at our numbers.
Right.
So basically, the same data is going to be used on both ends of the argument.
Right.
If you ask me, then I think that we were successful.
Not being on a ventilator is
worth
a whole lot of economic damage.
That is huge.
One person not being on a ventilator
is
worth a lot.
Nobody was on a ventilator. Now, do I think there were people out there that had COVID?
And recovered.
And recovered? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Do I think, I even think that we may have had a potential, some of it happened last year.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying?
Because we had a lot of sick people in January, February.
And starting about November, you know, you had some schools that closed because they had too much flu, right? But then all of those people tested negative for flu.
We will likely see a lot of people and children come up with antibodies.
You know, that's a distinct possibility, but until the health organizations, you know, come in and decide, okay, there was a potential wave of it that came through, well, then I don't claim to be a immunologist or a virologist or MD or anything.
You don't use Facebook enough to have your MD?
No, okay. I do not. So until the experts, I guess I should say, in the field, our version of Dr. Fauci comes in and tells us what to do and how we need to research it or look at it. In the meantime, economically, we cannot just sit still, but we can still continue to implement safety measures at every level. And it would be foolish not to.
Right.
Absolutely foolish not to.
All right. Well, I hope our version of Dr. Fauci over here to talk about it, but I know he's standing out in the park hoping everybody will wear a mask.
There you go. There you go. Yes. And kudos definitely to Dr. Luna, because Ray Luna has been champion through all of this.
He really has. And he has insisted on a lot of things coming to Polk County to protect the people here.
He has done an outstanding job. And if nothing else, certainly you can see the dedication that all of our physicians have had for the county, you know, and for the residents of this county. They've all stepped up and they have all volunteered their time, their services, their whatever needed to be done. They've done it. So huge kudos to our medical community in terms of what they've been willing to provide and to sacrifice.
All right. And we are now under a burn ban.
Yes.
That's not funny. I'm sorry. But it's just like, you can't even say when it rains and it pours. Because if it would pour a little bit, we would.
So it's Murphy's Law, right? Should have kept that maiden name. No.
What can Brown do for you?
That's right. No, all joking aside, yes, we are under burn ban. And it's a countywide burn ban. Mm-hmm. And we did that on purpose because we had people not thinking, you know, you're just thinking, I got to get this cleared up, cleaned up off my yard. And so not thinking, they built burn piles, which is, we're in rural America.
That's how we get rid of a lot of vegetative debris. But
exactly.
If you'll just hold your horses, there's a graphic on the Enterprise Facebook page, Emergency Management Facebook page, about sort that stuff, put it to the edge of your road near where if you had a sidewalk or a curb, you can
someone
imagine
would pick
that
it up.
Be.
Yes, you would be obstructing pedestrian traffic. But the problem is that with all this debris that's on the ground, then that's just a tinderbox waiting to go up. And so we don't want to take a chance. We don't want to risk it having a wildfire or a in-town fire, for that matter, that would then create even more issues for those individuals that are already affected and impacted, or pull our fire departments.
If they're having to go and deal with something in Metropolitan Segno, you know, we need them standing by
Absolutely.
Where the big burn piles are.
Yeah. And we don't want to derail them from the work that they're doing right now, because right now they are going down roadways and in neighborhoods and, you know, trying to get things cleaned up. And so we don't need our volunteer fire departments to have to leave from providing assistance because someone's burning something and it got out of hand. And so we made it countywide. Our numbers are not completely there, but the recommendation from the Forest Service was because of the circumstances and because of how quickly things are drying up. Mm-hmm. Most people don't think about it, but the wind dries things up very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have really strong sunlight and high temperatures for it to dry to dry things up. And so the wind, we all know the wind's been blowing, you know, it brought us a tornado. So the wind's been blowing pretty hard. So we just don't want to take a chance. We just can't afford to.
And if you want more information about that, you can find that on the Texas Forest Service website.
Yes, ma'am.
Texas A&M, Texas Forest Service.
Yes, ma'am.
Will have you, has a lot of drought information out there that you can read at your leisure.
There you go.
Well, thank you, Judge, for stopping by. I know you've had a hellaciously busy schedule.
It's been crazy.
Thank you.
Anna. Well, we're just trying to get as much information out across every avenue that we can for the people of Polk County and try to take care of them as much as we can. So appreciate y'all's time.
All right. Well, thank you. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.